Hello and welcome to the Road to the Garden podcast. I'm Matt St. Jean here with Chris the Dinga. What a Wednesday night in the Big East. Chris, got the doubleheader, two games going at once. This was testing my attention to the max, trying to follow all the stuff that was just going on.
Yeah, the double TV was a must have. Fantastic basketball. And both games were, there was like 11 seconds left in each game at one point. And it was like, man, both of these have been fantastic. So kind of bummed they weren't spread out a little bit more. But
yeah, I feel like I needed like NFL red zone for tonight in college basketball, which, hey, they did try that on opening night. Maybe.
We've seen the whip around coverage. I'm not opposed to it, but we'll see.
Yeah. Unfortunately, both these games on different networks. So that was not going to happen. Not going to happen with that one unless the Big East themselves are doing it. We're going to be talking about Creighton Xavier. Xavier holds on. We're going to be talking about Marquette and UConn there. Marquette holding on. Both home teams winning tonight. Couple big games on Tuesday night as well. And we're going to be looking ahead to the schedule here on tonight's episode. Huge, huge week here in the Big East. Starting to learn a little bit more about these teams as we go on. So we're going to get into it. A couple reminders before we do. First, we've teamed up with SeatGeek this season to get you the best deals for tickets to your favorite teams. SeatGeek takes the confusion out of buying tickets, and they're here to give you some great deals. Get in on the fun and head over to SeatGeek, download their app, and use code NCAA Hoops Digest for $20 off your first purchase. And also, this podcast is presented by House Enterprise and in partnership with House of College Hoops. Head over to our site, house-enterprise.com, for more info. All right, Chris, let's start with this Creighton-Xavier game. Xavier kind of holds on here at the end. Despite a late Blue Jay effort, Xavier now 6-0 in the Big East. Creighton 3-3. From the outsider perspective for Creighton, I'm not sure that 3-3 Big East record speaks to how good this team is. What do you think?
Yeah, Creighton is 1-5 now on the year in one possession games, or 4 points or less games. The 3-3 certainly isn't indicative of their skill level. And like you said, all three of these losses have been on the road against pretty darn good teams, right? UConn, Marquette, and now Xavier. So they're right there, but they just, there's problems. We'll get to them on this podcast, but there's certainly things for concern there. Xavier looked fantastic, though. That's a really, really good team. And it was fun to see them perform once again on this stage against that top five tier of Big East teams.
Yeah, Xavier's a team that has looked really, really good this season. They've pulled out some close ones. This is not the first close Big East game they've won at home. They did this against Xavier by 3 points back at the end of December. Now they do it here. I think it's funny. This Xavier offense is incredibly impressive, and they do a lot well. The defense, on the other hand, I think we saw got exploited by Creighton for a long stretch. The first half was just, there's no defense to be found, just none of it. It was incredibly exciting basketball to watch. And then I think we saw the team start to figure out what was working on the defensive end a little bit in the second half.
Yeah, it was super fun. Like you said, that first half, that style of play, I think, favors Xavier. And so I was kind of bummed to see Creighton kind of give into that style, not because they can't do it, but because they don't have the bench to, sustain it. If you're running that much up and down for 35 minutes for all your starters, it's going to wear you down. Whereas Xavier has guys that they give them, I think, 45 bench minutes and 17 points off the bench, where Creighton had 22 bench minutes and only 3 points off the bench, which in a game with that many possessions, that really does take a toll when everyone's playing 35 minutes. But yeah, exciting basketball for sure.
Yeah, a back and forth affair. And I think kind of the final nail in the coffin in this one was that Sule Boom layup near the end going up over Ryan Kalkbrenner. I did not know he had that in them. I didn't know anybody in the Big East had that in them to go up and over him with a shot. And that's Sule Boom is making a case right now, a very easy case for first team All Big East. And he's getting into the player of the year conversation now in the conference.
Yeah, Sule Boom and Shireman, the big transfers, over, what is it, 51 points today, which is a lot of fun. But yeah, Sule, high off the glass, he played a great game and obviously very, very good from the stripe this year. It was really fun.
Yep, 26 points for Boom, 25 for Shireman. You mentioned the bench points here being an issue for Creighton. I was impressed with the ability of despite the bench not doing anything, the starting five was keeping up with Xavier and leading for long, long stretches of this game. It was Jerome Hunter who had to hit that three coming into the half for Xavier to make it close. So what did you see in the first half that you liked from the Blue Jays? And then what happened in the second half that made that lead dwindle and then eventually go Xavier's way?
They did a lot more off-ball action, in my opinion, today in the last couple games than they had during that losing stretch, which I think is in big part, right, is just Kalkbrenner's back in the lineup, so you can do a lot more things. But yeah, all the offensive sets looked really clean and crisp, and they got into them very quickly. In the second half, it looked kind of like they were worn down a little bit. After, you know, 12, 13 minutes left in the second half, they hit a little bit of a lull, and Shireman was kind of the only one hitting shots for a while, but... yeah, the offense is there. Defense was pretty apathetic in the first half for both teams, which is, you know, obviously concerning. But these two, for my money, these are the two best offenses in the Big East.
Yeah, and they're playing up there like it. I think the only other one in the conversation for that right now is probably Marquette.
Yeah.
And we will see Xavier and Marquette face off this weekend. So I think that'll be another one of these offensive battles. Be interesting to see how that happens. Yeah, what Creighton does in the half court is as good as really what anybody else in the Big East is doing. I think the biggest issue for the Blue Jays has been that even though it gets open looks, the guys just don't hit them consistently. Right. There's that stat they showed during the broadcast about how what they have a perfect record when shooting over 50% and 1-7 when shooting under it, something along those lines. They shot exactly 50% tonight. You have a 3-point road loss, which is probably as close to a push as you're going to get for something like that. And yeah, it's that's what Creighton is right now.
Yeah, and this is almost a bad word in Creighton circles right now, but the shot quality of all their games shows Creighton is winning all these games, right? They get the shots that they want to get for the most part, and it's just a matter of hitting shots, right? That's a lot of basketball, but... in a game like today, right? I mean, if you're hitting your shots, these are the type of games you got to win. And Creighton is a better defensive team than offensive team on KenPom, and they did not quite show that tonight. They let a lot of offensive rebounds go, especially down the stretch. Nungy kind of tore them up on the boards, and that was pretty key.
Yeah, and that was something I kind of expected to see, to be honest. Not the offensive rebounds, but Xavier's offense working here. I thought this was a bad matchup for Creighton when Xavier had the ball. I didn't think they were going to be able to just match up with the shooting that Xavier brings and the offensive movement. And I was impressed with what they did. They exceeded my expectations there defensively. It's tough to exceed expectations defensively, but then also give up as many points as you give up because Xavier is just so good at making the shots.
Right.
Like you catch up, you do some good things on defense, and it doesn't even matter because Sule Boone can kind of hit anything, and Fremantle and Nungy and Colby Jones and Adam Kunkel and Jerome Hunter hit a three. Like that's when you're in that kind of position, it becomes tough.
Yeah. And like you said, right, there were so many possessions in this game that 90 points seems like a lot, but it's not an absurd amount considering the up and down play of the game. Here's a quick stat for you. When Kalkbrenner's off on the bench today, in 3 minutes of Fred King action, Creighton goes -9. In 3 minutes, we all know Kalkbrenner's awesome, right? But in the NCAA tournament, if you can't spell him for 3 minutes of effective basketball, that's going to be a big problem.
Yeah, and apart from the shooting, that is the other story for Creighton this year. And you can see it in the record, too. Most of those losses come with Kalkbrenner out or playing through something, and was it 9 points in a 3-point game here? That is the ball game. That is the difference. And I it does help that I think Xavier's a top tier opponent here. So Creighton's going to be able to beat a lot of teams and rack up a lot of wins here in Big East play against the Butlers and Seton Halls and St. John's and DePaul's and Georgetown's of the world because, yeah, you can live with Frederick King in games like that. But when it comes to March, when it comes to potentially April, that's the downfall right there.
Yeah. Creighton, after the Providence game on the 14th, they do have Butler, St. John's, you know, Georgetown, Nova coming up. So there's definitely wins to be had, and it's at 9-8, definitely not pounding the alarm here. But, I mean, at some point, you got to start kind of winning these big games.
Yeah. Creighton right now has the number one highest strength of schedule so far in the conference after this. So yeah, I don't think that 3-3 record fully explains where they are. You know what I did think was interesting? Creighton came into tonight, number 18 on KenPom, two spots ahead of Xavier. Xavier came in tonight at 20. Chris, do you know where they are now after this game?
I don't. Let me take a guess. I'll go Xavier at 19, Creighton at 15.
Nope. Neither team moved.
Okay.
They are exactly where they were before, which I think says, like, this game went as the metrics kind of expected it would, which is where I don't like the metrics say that Creighton is a 4 or 5 seed here, and they played like it against a team that is also a 4 or 5 seed on the road. So I don't, obviously you got to win games, but I wouldn't be too worried about this if I'm a Creighton fan.
Yeah. It definitely ups the importance of the next couple games though, right? Because if you drop one to Providence at home, then you're 9-9, then real NCAA tournament berth questions come into play. But if you win that one, 10-8, you get another win, things will be okay.
Yeah. And we're going to talk about the UConn Marquette game here in a second, but I think it's worth pointing out there's a top tier here in the Big East, 5 teams that are clearly separated from everybody else right now. And that's Providence and Xavier. They're at 6-0, UConn, Marquette, and Creighton. The only losses that those teams have in Big East play are on the road against other teams that are in that group, which, I mean, this kind of becomes a staring contest. It's who blinks first, who loses at home to one of those teams first. Creighton's going to have a huge game on Saturday in that regard. And obviously it's a huge game for Providence there, because we're looking at a situation where you might have to go 15-5 or 16-4, or even 17-3 to win the Big East in the regular season this year. And you got to defend your home court to do it. The season doesn't really start here until one of these teams loses a home game.
Yeah, we are blessed with 5 really, really great teams, and very fortunate for that for the whole conference, because there's so many opportunities to pick up good wins, right? But yeah, whoever is able to pick up the big road win will certainly be the king of the conference.
Yeah, and Creighton's gotten unlucky here in getting Marquette, UConn, and Xavier all on the road already. Everybody in the Big East, we all play the same games. So in a sense, it doesn't really matter when the wins and losses happen. It's everybody's going to play the same things. And right now, the wins and losses are different in the top 5, but everybody's doing what they should if you expect this team to be a team that could win the conference. So this is the most interesting Big East season in a while, I think, because of how crowded it is at the top.
Absolutely. Yeah. Do you want to jump over, while we're talking about the whole Big East, you want to jump over to the other game tonight?
Yeah. So this is UConn travels out to Marquette. Marquette's last home loss in regulation actually came to UConn in that building in their home conference opener last year. So, and this is a UConn team that's ranked and was favored in this game despite being on the road at Marquette. And UConn put together a couple of runs, looked like they were going to take over this game. Marquette answered every single time. Golden Eagles pull out the dub in this one. Huge game. Now, this is 3 out of 4 losses. 3 losses in 4 games now for UConn. So that's a little bit worrying, but I would argue the same thing at Creighton is here, that they're all in that same category of loss. Do you think this game matters more for Marquette or for UConn?
We'll go UConn. And it's tough. It matters for both, right? But that's UConn. That's 3 losses in 4 games. Definitely not the start that they had in the non-con, but you know, Big East basketball is a whole different beast, and these road games are really, really tough. It was interesting on the UConn side, Klingon playing more minutes than Sanogo, and probably being better than Sanogo, honestly, and that was fascinating.
Yeah, that's something I've kind of been thinking about for a while, but I wasn't sure where I was with that. But I think we're starting to get a legitimate argument for Klingon being, I don't know if he's the better player, but he causes more matchup issues. And his Absolutely. Height is just so insane that, like, these UConn guards have had a real hard time getting the ball inside to Sanogo at certain points. Klingon is a bigger frame. It's just easier to lob the ball up and let him go get it, and then you've got the ball in the post, and you can let him work on whatever he's doing, or you can do pick and roll with him. He's a bigger target to pass the ball to. I think there's been more turnovers from trying to get it to Sanogo, and I mean, who in the Big East can match up with clinging right now?
It's a real question. I mean, he went 8 for 11 tonight, and a couple of his misses, there was arguably some contact, right? It seems like every time he touches the ball, something good comes about it for UConn. Yeah, he had 9 points at half, ends with 21. I'm curious what you think Marquette did differently defensively to stave off UConn in the second half.
I think they stuck with what has worked now against UConn for a couple road games, which is to clog the paint as much as possible and force UConn to try to shoot from the outside. Huskies have not been good shooting the three ball, especially on the road here in conference play. And I think they did a good job of harassing UConn guards when they had the ball. Really everybody. Sunogo had 5 turnovers. Hawkins had 2. Andre Jackson had 3. Klingon had a turnover. Hassan Diarra had a turnover. Tristan Newton had a turnover. We all know what that Marquette defense can do to teams. It's a UConn backcourt that has not been immune to turnovers this year. They've had their issues. And this is, I look at, I was talking with Jim Root from Three Man Weave on Twitter earlier about this, but Auburn last season was such a good team all year long, but their entire team went through Jabari Smith and Walker Kessler, 2 post guys. So when they got into positions where they needed a bucket, it's they don't have guards that are creating as much. You have to get the ball in to the guy to create the play. When that happens, you have more options on defense, which I think we saw all game, but especially in the second half, they were able to deny the ball and make life difficult for them. And then the whole offense gets stale. And if you spend half the shot clock trying to get the ball down low and you can't do it, now you're stuck with guards who can't create with only 10 or 12 seconds on the shot clock trying to make something happen. And they UConn did. I mean, they were in this game, but not enough on the road to get the win.
Yep. You hit it right on the head with it there with it's like, who's going to be the guy with the basketball to create in a big moment for UConn? And yeah, maybe Andre Jackson, but he's not a very good shooter, right? And so then you kind of look around and it's like, who's going to be the guy here? And that's a, honestly, that's a very big question at the end of games for UConn.
Yeah. And it's, you look at the guards that they brought in the transfer market here. And I don't think any of them have quite lived up to the billing. Tristan Newton has been fine. Hassan Diarra has been fine. Nahim Aline has been fine, but they're not really impact players right now. They didn't get a Sule Boom out of that the way Xavier did. They didn't get a Baylor Shireman type guy out of that. They didn't get, I think they thought they might be getting a 3-level scorer or somebody who can really set up the offense, but it just has not worked out that way. And I think we have found the flaw on the team. I'd also mention Omax Prosper going off, and I think we've seen issues where you kind of can't defend at the four. We talked about this with Bryce Hopkins, and it happens again with Omax Prosper.
Yeah, that was one thing when Creighton played UConn, Arthur Kaluma wasn't able to do much. And I thought, okay, maybe UConn made some adjustments and were helping more when Caravan was guarding an athletic bigger four. And yeah, kind of went back to their old ways today, and Prosper had a great day.
Yeah. 17 points for Prosper. Caravan had 17 points. So that kind of netted out to nothing. But and Caravan had a good day on offense, so that he didn't get bullied off the court the way he did when UConn lost to Providence. He was playable, so it was better, but still, you'd like him to be winning that. And yeah, you got, this is a UConn team that's now relying on a couple freshmen. It really needs some of these freshmen to play well, and Klingon's doing it, and Caravan's doing it, but that's also because some of these veterans aren't doing it the way we thought they might.
Yeah. And then how about Cam Jones? A big second half for him. Yeah. 6 buckets, I believe them. They were all in the second half. Yeah, great day for Cam. Big 3 at the end there too.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, I was talking about it before. Marquette, I still don't understand why they ever left the rankings in any of this. Marquette has clearly been a top 25 team ever since beating Baylor in my eyes, and that it should have been there. But you win a game like this, the way Marquette did, I think Marquette should be looking at them as a minimum a top 15 team right now. I don't think they're going to move up there, but that's what they look like to me.
I haven't seen 15 teams that are playing better basketball right now than Marquette. Absolutely not.
Marquette just moved up to number 14 in KenPom. So I think that pretty much accurately reflects it. The Big East has 5 teams here in the top 28 of KenPom now, which is amazing. I'd also mention I had made this prediction back when we did our midseason predictions show that I thought the Big East was going to move up into the top 3 conferences this year. They just did on KenPom.
Yeah. I believe I scoffed at you a little bit. So well done.
It's right now. I mean, I think you could put five teams from the Big East between the 2, 3, and 4 lines, and I'd feel pretty good about it.
Yeah, the top half of the conference can rival pretty much everyone. Obviously, the Big 12 is kind of above everyone else, but you take the top half of any other conference, I'm taking the Big East right now.
And we saw Marquette destroy a Baylor team at the top of the Big 12. So, yeah, I think the Big East got a little bit unlucky with some of the non-conference matchups this year. And I think that's why teams looked at this conference the way they did. But look at it now. These teams are playing incredible basketball, and we'll see what happens down the stretch here. At least that's the top five. I think we got to move down to the bottom half real quick, because we have an important result from Tuesday night. And that is Villanova finally losing to DePaul for the first time in the new Big East. The first time since January of 2008. I had tweeted this last night, but I will read it for the show here, of just things that were like the thing back then. So when the last time DePaul beat Villanova before this one, George W. Bush was still president. National Treasure Book of Secrets was the top movie.
Wow.
Low by Flo Rida was the top song. And the New England Patriots had just finished a 16-0 regular season, as we all know. Tragically, they had to cancel the playoffs that year. Real shame in the NFL. But so that's where the world was the last time DePaul beat Villanova. And Villanova's kind of tournament hopes here, I think, are their at-large bid hopes are all but dead.
Yeah, absolutely. And maybe Tommy will disagree with us here. I don't know. But the resume is just not there, and they have too bad of losses to kind of justify, even if they went on a little bit of a run here. They would need to almost clean house the rest of the way. This was a bad loss, man. The way they handled possessions at the end of that game was just not great. Didn't get good shots.
No. And Eric Dixon, he's been one of the better centers in the Big East now for a couple of years. He's incredible. DeShaun Nelson got the best of him for long stretches of this game. He was incredible to watch, the JUCO transfer that DePaul got. He just beat Eric Dixon for most of the night, which I did not see coming. And it was an impressive performance from DePaul. Villanova had issues, but I thought DePaul had an opportunity here, went out and took it. I was impressed by what we saw from the Blue Demons.
Yeah, they weren't fazed. You're facing Villanova, the big bad cat of the Big East the last 10 years. And to be not fazed at the end of the game in a very close game, right? The scoreboard says 10-point difference, but that game was very, very tight. And they handled that like grown adults out there. And that was pretty awesome for DePaul and good for Stubbs. That's a good win.
Yeah, this is a program that needed it right now, too. DePaul's had a real rough start to the season, and a lot of it's kind of out of their hands. Lots of injuries there. And DePaul's not as bad as the record would suggest, but they did this without Caleb Murphy, who I think should be coming back soon, and Nick Onjenda, who should also be coming back presumably within the next month or so here. So they're going to get some reinforcements, and that's where DePaul can start to turn the corner. This is a DePaul team that I think can play spoiler in the Big East big time, depending on how well they play. And Villanova, on the flip side here, they now are without Jordan Longino for the next 2 weeks. Justin Moore still not back. This team didn't need more injuries, and look where they are now.
Yeah. They need Justin back more now more than ever. I was seeing some tweets that it's coming in the next like couple of weeks, so we'll see. I don't want to speculate too much, but if he comes back, things definitely are adjusted. This team just, I don't know if they have that next gear, in close games down the stretch. I don't know if they can push it to that next step. So,
Villanova is 122nd in defensive efficiency this year. They get basically no blocks on defense. They're 356th in block percentage. So they got no rim stopping ability, which I think, as we've seen, you would need in the Big East this year. And they got no 3-point defense. They're fouling the wrong guys. They don't get steals. This defense really does not do a lot well right now. And it's going to need to turn around. I will say the schedule coming up for Villanova, and we're going to talk about the Friday game here in a couple minutes. They go and play at Butler. That's winnable. They get Georgetown at home. That should be a win. They go to St. John's. That's winnable. They already beat St. John's once here. After that, it's a home game against Providence. And then that becomes an interesting one. You win three in a row here, which I think the team is capable of doing. And all of a sudden, that game becomes one where you win it and things are going in the right direction. Are they capable of doing it? Yes. Will they? I have absolutely no idea.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's focus on winning the first one first, and then we can talk about the rest. But yeah, they certainly get there with a 3-0 record, and then they beat Providence in your, what would they be, 12-9 at that point, then we can start to have a conversation about them again, but they're ways out.
Yeah. And I mean, this team doesn't have a quad win so far this year, quad one win. And that Providence game, as of right now, would not be a quad one opportunity. We'll see if that changes. The Friars are not far off from making it a quad one game. And then it's at Marquette, at Creighton.
Do you know what Providence is in the net?
I believe it's at 33 or 34 at the moment. Yeah. 34. Okay. So yeah, they're right outside there. And we'll see what happens over the coming weeks. The Friars have two difficult games in the meantime. They got to play at Creighton, which we're going to be talking about. They got to play at Marquette next week. A lot we're going to figure out here. But yeah, Villanova just needs to start by winning one game at a time. And this is a team that may be a sleeper to win like the Big East tournament. They may get back into that if they get healthy and full strength and the freshmen develop. But the at-large bid is really on basically a flat line at this point.
Yeah. Friday is a big one, that's for sure. Yeah. And yeah, if you want to jump into that one, Manny Bates, every time I feel like I see Butler, I'm like, man, this is going to be so fun. Manny Bates against another good big. And he's kind of had some tough performances here the last few weeks in the Big East after a great non-conference.
Yeah, and before we move on to that one, we'll talk. I mean, Butler just lost. They came east for two games. They lost to St. John's by 16 points in a game where they really just got away from them pretty quickly. Again, something we've seen with Butler here, especially in the second half. The other game Tuesday night, Seton Hall wins at Georgetown. Georgetown was in it for long stretches and then suddenly wasn't, as we've seen. That was a can't-lose game for Seton Hall as they kind of move up into the sixth position here in the Big East as the next team that could try to make a run here. Seton Hall is now, they're in the 50s in KenPom. They're the next team up in the net. So maybe they're at 55 right now in KenPom. And yeah, it's 71 in the net. So they're on the outside looking in, but they're that next team. But we'll go back to Villanova Butlers. We're going to start to look ahead here on the schedule to the rest of the week. This is the Friday night game. Villanova travels to Hinkle to take on the Bulldogs. It's a building where the Hoyas have really had some issues, and Butler has played much better at home this season. So I think this is a de facto elimination game for the at-large hopes for both of these teams.
Yeah, Butler definitely needs this one after getting kind of throttled by St. John's. They're kind of working back so many pieces right now. It's tough to have all these guys come back mid-season, like Miles Tate and Ali, and working these guys in with the rotation has been kind of challenging, I think. And next year might be the year Butler kind of gets back on track. But I think Eric Dixon can kind of have his way in the paint in that one.
You think so? I think so. See, I look at this, and this is a build. It's a building where Villanova has struggled to shoot in the past. And maybe that has little relevance on this game, but I feel like it's hard to overlook the impact that building has had on this team, a team that has kind of been inconsistent shooting the ball. And I think, I don't know, Eric Dixon's kind of due for a bounce back, but also Manny Bates is good. I think we're going to see, but then Manny Bates is kind of in that same mold as Joel Soriano. And I thought Eric Dixon did a really good job against him. So yep. Yes,
and then Soriano put up what 20 and 10 against Bates is 3 points. When Bates has faced up the other really good bigs in the Big East, man, it just hasn't worked out so far. And I see the talent, like it's there. It's just it's been a tough couple weeks.
Yeah, honestly, I look at this as Cam Whitmore is a guy too with the four. That's a spot where Villanova has also had issues here. Butler's had issues defending. I look at Bryce Hopkins went off against the Bulldogs, and Cam Whitmore is going to have a shot to do that here. It's just tough because Villanova always feels like they're playing 4-on-5 on offense, especially with Longino out.
And yeah, legitimately. I love C. Arch, but he's not supposed to be a guy playing 30 minutes, 25 minutes. It's supposed to be significantly less. So, I don't know. We'll see.
They recruited over him here, and the guys that were supposed to fill that spot have not developed.
Right.
So yeah, that's. I'm gonna take Butler here because the Bulldogs are at home, okay. But I don't feel good about it.
Trusting in Hinkle magic. Well, yeah, I'll go Nova by 15. I don't think it's very close.
And this is a huge game because Butler is one of the few teams at the bottom here that has a quad one win, and that kind of keeps them alive in the tournament situation here. They have some bad losses, but also mostly on the road or to good teams. They can overcome stuff if they put together some wins here, and obviously we know where Villanova is. Villanova just can't really afford to lose any games at the moment. So I think losing this one for Butler would pretty much end their at-large hopes, and a loss for Villanova, and that's done.
Yep, absolutely. Yep. Both of them and Seton Hall are all kind of hanging on by a thread at various lengths here.
Yeah. Yeah, and we're going to talk about Seton Hall here next. So that Villanova-Butler game, Friday the 13th. Oh, it's a Friday the 13th in Hinkle. Yeah, I'm taking Butler.
Nah,
that feels a little Friday the 13th magic dicey. There.
Yeah.
Friday the 13th there, 7 p.m. Eastern in Fox Sports 1, noon the next day. DePaul is going to try to do it again here at home against a team that's just hanging on to some tournament hopes. Seton Hall goes out to the Midwest to take on the Blue Demons. Noon on FS1. What are you looking at in this game?
Man, it's tough. Seton Hall kind of rolled over against Creighton, I thought. They got down early, and it was that was game. Never any energy after that. And then, obviously, they picked up some wins. That's a good team. I just, I don't know. I think the first 5 to 6 minutes, that pace-setting portion of the game, is going to be pretty massive. But I like Seton Hall in it overall.
Yeah, this is – I don't know what to do with a game like this, mostly because Seton Hall has not quite been the same team on the road. They've been at home. But also this DePaul defense is one I think their defense can stifle. For Seton Hall, if you're optimistic about Seton Hall, this goes the same way the Georgetown game just did. Close for stretches, and you end up pulling it out. But if DePaul just found something, and if Caleb Murphy ends up playing here, which he is close to a return, maybe Saturday's it, that shakes things up a little bit. I'm going to take Seton Hall, but again, I don't feel good about it. I never feel good about taking a road team in the Big East.
Yeah, but I do think, you know, Kadari Richmond is the best player in that game, in my opinion, and having the best player on the road certainly helps.
It most certainly does. Although, hey, Deshaun Nelson, with the way he played, he may make an argument for that.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's a good one. I'm also, neither of those teams has a massive amount of size, which they've struggled. Both of those teams have struggled when they have to go up against teams with size. Now they're going against one another and it changes the formula. So I think it's hard to know exactly how those teams are going to match up.
Yeah, it'll be fun. It'll be fun to see both of those teams not just get kind of worked on the glass and beaten up down low.
Yeah. So that's the appetizer on Saturday afternoon, noon there at noon Eastern, FS1. Right after that is our game of the week. This is why one of the reasons I brought you on, Chris. You're the Creighton guy. I'm the Providence guy. Friars traveling to Omaha. And, oh, man, this should be a good one. The last two games between these teams were not close. Creighton blew out Providence at MSG. The Friars blew out Creighton to win the Big East regular season championship at the then Dunkin' Donuts Center. These are arguably two of the best coaches in the conference. And this is just an intriguing matchup in every single way.
Yeah, this is a big one. And this is the biggest game at Omaha this year, right? Because they hosted Butler, they hosted DePaul. This is that kind of next level. So I think Omaha is going to be ready to rock. I certainly know what I would do if I was Providence and how to attack Creighton's defense. And I would just go right at Kalkbrenner and try to get him some fouls earlier, get him, you know, a little bit worn out with just pounding at him with Hopkins or Croswell or whoever you want to throw at him. But I do lean the home team here, Matt.
Yeah, it's going to be – I mean, it's hard to pick against the home team right now with any of the top five. These are teams that are all so good that I feel like the home court advantage kind of ends up being the deciding factor. I'm interested to see how Ed Cooley handles Ryan Kalkbrenner just in general because, you know, they're giving up a lot of size with Ed Croswell against him. And how they handle – I mean, does Clifton Moore come in? Does Rafael Castro come in? Both of those guys have had issues. The flip side is that I think the Friars go a little bit deeper here We'll also have to see Jared Bynum's status is still up in the air. The Friars get a week off heading into this one. So if Bynum goes, I think that changes things. Bynum going, I think the Friars have a real chance. If he can't play, I think things get a lot more difficult for Providence.
Yeah, and another matchup you get is Bryce Hopkins and Kaluma, which are, in my opinion, probably two of the more pro-ready type guys in the conference, which will be a lot of fun. Two athletic four-man that can shoot the three a little bit too. So there's a lot of intriguing stuff here. I think it will not be one of the blowouts that we saw last year. This one's going to be pretty tight the entire way. Yeah, it'll be good.
Yeah, these two teams have really played some good games over the years too. This is kind of... Is it a rivalry between Providence and Creighton here? The two teams played in the first new Big East championship. The Friars won their first Big East regular season over Creighton. The Friars had hit a buzzer beater out there, and they've played a couple times at the Big East tournament now, even not in the championship game. Yeah.
I mean, I don't enjoy playing Providence. I'll tell you that.
I always think back to that game back in 2020. David Duke went out there and put up 36 points and still couldn't get it done. Tyshawn Alexander, 24 in that one.
Yeah, that's a name, man. Tyshawn, I miss you. I miss that entire roster.
That was a fun Creighton team that year.
Yeah, it was. What could have been if, well, I mean, the tournament got canceled, but also Zagorowski hurt. We'll never know.
No. It's a shame that we didn't get the tournament that year, because I think that would have been one of the more special ones we've seen and recent memory. So yeah, lots of history between Providence and Creighton. Friars come into this one ranked too. I think we have to mention they move up to number 19 in the AP poll, which if you win this one in Providence, you have to think Friars end up as a top 15 team. Then you're in a position where I think UConn's not going to drop out of the top 15. Xavier's already in the top 15 in one. Marquette is probably going to move up into that territory. We'll see what they do on Sunday. And then the Friars, we could end up with four top 15 teams in the Big East.
Yeah, and they like if I had to rank, right, and I will for House of College Hoops on Sunday night, it'll probably just be a hodgepodge, right, where I'll throw all four of those teams kind of back to back to back to back, because I don't know who's better. It's just kind of a mess. And but yeah, it's fantastic, and it makes for great entertainment. This is a big game for Providence. It's a big game for Providence.
Yeah, it's, I don't know, I mean, it's hard to call any of these a must win between these teams, but you learn, like, it sets the baseline. And the second somebody gets a road win in one of these Big East games, it feels like, all right, now we're started. Now the party's going. And this could happen in this one. It could happen on Sunday. We'll have a show on Sunday to preview some of those, but what the heck? We can go through the Sunday games right now, too, while we're at it, because Marquette at Xavier is one of them, which, by the way, there's two games at noon on Sunday. St. John's at UConn, Marquette at Xavier. Marquette at Xavier gets the national window there on Fox, the other one on FS1. And part of that's because of the NFL playoffs coming up this weekend. So that's they're trying to keep the games early. And then that way the playoff games can go after. But that Marquette at Xavier game feels like we're doing a little playoff here where the two teams that won tonight, Wednesday night, are now playing each other on Sunday.
Right, it's crazy. That is the joy of having five great teams, is you're always going to have, you know, awesome matchups. OMAX and Oso versus Nungi and Fremantle is just such a fascinating 4-5s matchup that it's going to be intriguing. It's going to be high pace, first to, you know, 95 type of game, probably wins. So it'll be fun.
Yeah, Marquette is currently fourth in offensive efficiency on Yenbaum. Xavier is seventh.
Yeah. It's nuts.
Yeah,
I wonder when the last time the Big East had two teams in the top seven on offensive efficiency.
Yeah, well, it gets better. They have three teams in the top eight because UConn is right there at eight. Jeez. And then Providence at 21 and Creighton at 28. So it's been, we talked about the Big East teams at the top, it's been almost entirely on the back of offense. UConn's the only good defense in there, and this is a UConn defense that I think in Big East play has not been as good as it was in non-conference play.
Right. And I will say all those teams have good defenses. Creighton, I'm trying to look right
they're,
now.
Creighton's they're fine.
30, you know, 30s. Marquette's probably 30s. Xavier's kind of the only outlier at 87.
Marquette's at 83.
Really?
On defense. Yeah. Which you would never guess. Yeah, I think they sacrifice a lot in efficiency for trying to force some of those turnovers. And I think they're okay with that trade-off. But The Friars scored a ton of points. Friars went over 100 against Marquette. And that was obviously a double overtime game. But
yeah,
teams have been able to score on the Golden
Eagles. We're proud of shot like 74 free throws or whatever the total was.
Something on, I think it was 40 something. It wasn't the Heat going 40 for 40, but it was close.
Yeah, I saw people complain about free throw discrepancy. I was watching a game today also. USC Upstate was playing Campbell, and the free throw discrepancy was 30-2 at one point, which is absurd.
How does that happen? If it's that biased, like, you know that there has to be something with the team's styles going on, because no ref would make it that biased. Intentionally. Like, if you're trying to fix a game, you also want it to be close enough that nobody's going to call you on it.
Yeah, yeah. 30-2 is a little bit more than they would want. Yeah.
It's a little bit obvious, which is kind of how I felt about that Providence Marquette game too. The Friars just draw fouls. That's what Providence does, which, going back to the Providence Creighton game, I'll be interested to see how it goes with that, because I think Creighton for the most part has been pretty disciplined on defense.
Yeah, second or third on less, like, least fouls given up. So yeah, contrasting styles for sure.
Yeah, they've number two in the country there. So that becomes kind of one of the defining factors of this game. Friars ninth to get into the line. Creighton's second best, not setting a bonus to the line. That'll probably determine how that goes. And with Creighton being at home, I would imagine they're more likely to get the calls in that scenario. And then Providence probably gets more of the calls than the return trip.
Yeah, my Butler preview, when Butler came to Omaha, it was kind of the same thing, right? Butler gets to the line a bunch, and that was kind of the game plan for them. It's they're contrasting styles, and generally in those type of things, the team that doesn't foul on defense ends up winning out. But Butler is a bit of a, playing Providence is a lot different than playing Butler this year.
Yeah, two very different tiers of team right now as we look at the Big East here. We can make some predictions on these. Did I make my prediction on the Saturday game?
I don't think so.
Providence Creighton. I'm going to pick Creighton. Because Creighton's at home. I'm picking the home team until somebody actually goes on the road and does this. I picked a road team tonight. I thought UConn was going to go win at Marquette. I was dead wrong. And the Huskies looked good for stretches. I felt good in the first half that my prediction was going to be correct. But the way Marquette came out in the second half and just put some runs together was incredibly impressive. So they proved that wrong. And I'm not touching that. I'm taking the home teams in this.
Yeah, I'm going to go Creighton as well. It'll be tight, but yeah, the home does matter a whole bunch right now. And Creighton needs this game. Capital N needs it. You do not want to be 9-9.
Yeah. And the Friars here have banked 6 Big East wins, and we're not even at Martin Luther King Day yet. Like they're basically, if we're saying 12 Big East wins is probably the threshold to become a tournament team, they're halfway there already. So I don't think we're going to see a desperate Providence team. We might see a desperate Creighton team trying to bounce back here after back-to-back losses.
So remind me, what was Providence picked preseason last year in the conference?
Seventh, I believe.
And then they were what, sixth this year?
I think they were fourth this year. Let me pull this up.
Okay. Because I was going to say the record in the last 2 years combined in comparison to their preseason projections is one of the more absurd coaching jobs I have ever seen. Ed Cooley's fantastic.
Friars were picked fifth this year, UConn fourth, Nova third, Xavier second, Creighton first. I think they got four of the top five teams right there. Villanova wrong, and then Marquette, the team jumping up. I think Shaka Smart, by the way, needs to be in the National Coach of the Year conversation. This is the second year in a row he's done this, and Marquette has as good of a case as anybody in the Big East right now to be the top team in the conference.
Yeah. Yeah. If K-State kind of falls off and Jerome Tang doesn't get it, you could certainly make a case that, Shaka could do it. And there's only a short list of guys that kind of match Shaka right now for sure.
Yeah. And the only other guy from the Big East I'd put up there for the national conversation would have been Dan Hurley. But after tonight, it's hard to put Shaka anywhere but first in that conversation. Right.
Yeah,
for the Big East, at least.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Do we want to make some predictions on these Sunday games and then call it a show?
Let's do it.
All right. We'll start with the non-national one. St. John's at UConn. This one's going to be at the Excel Center, noon on Sunday. Do we have any reason to think UConn's first home loss is happening here?
Oh, man. Oh. I kind of want to do it. I kind of want to say it, but I'm not going to. No, we'll go UConn. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to do that too. I do get intrigued about issues that UConn has had in the backcourt and the way St. John's can force turnovers. I think St. John's can make this closer than people think it might be. And I think about how UConn struggled against Georgetown, how that game was close until all of a sudden it wasn't. That being like this wouldn't shock me, although this is a UConn team that has also had a backcourt that we've talked about. They're not making shots. They've been better at home. But if you get down against St. John's, that right there is where I would worry if I'm a UConn fan. I'm going to take UConn, but St. John's winning this is absolutely on the table.
Oh, yeah. That backcourt is feisty. And if they, I mean, I could see them kind of preventing UConn into getting into a lot of their stuff in the paint. And if you force UConn to hit outside jumpers, yeah, you never know. You never know.
Yeah, you got to catch them on a bad afternoon, which they have not had many of at home. Yeah. St. John's does it, though. They're going to have a real shot in that one. I think the trick this year, you got to force UConn to play from behind. They haven't been there very often this year, but if you can do it, you can control a game.
Absolutely.
Yeah. The other one, team that UConn just lost to, Marquette, going on the road to take on Xavier, the national game. I'm excited for this. I know Providence, Creighton got our game of the week, but this one's right there in that conversation.
Oh, yeah. So fascinating. So many matchups to watch and two teams on the rise, right, that have played really, really well in conference play so far. The winner of that game is probably in the top 10, I want to say. So
I'd have to think.
Right. So, yeah, a lot of implications here. Ah, man, I'm going to go with Xavier. I think they're just playing super, super well right now. They're so hard to stop on offense.
Yeah. I'm going to stay true to my word here and just pick the home team. When it's a matchup like this, I think Xavier gets it done. Musketeers have had a couple of close calls at home. Mm-hmm. They almost lost tonight against Creighton. They almost lost to Seton Hall. Seton Hall had a shot at the end to tie it, which, by the way, we didn't mention tonight. That shot, I believe it was Nemhard. Was it Nemhard that hit it at the end?
Trey hit Alexander. Yeah.
Trey Alexander. Great hit shot. That one. Okay. Unbelievable shot. Unbelievable. Yeah.
They keep that's like the third time this year where Creighton's trailing and then they hit some absurd shots to make it a game again with only a few seconds. Like same thing against Arizona. Shireman had a couple threes that was like, okay, thanks for getting my hopes up again.
Hey, it's look at that BYU game too. The way Creighton came back in that game, we were without an offensive rebound from BYU at the end of that one. I think the story we take away from that is Creighton grits out a win without Kalkbrenner, and the team finds its identity, and Greg McDermott does an awesome coaching job. And instead, because of one play, we're talking about it differently.
Yeah. I will say, while we're talking about Creighton one more time, a lot of gripes I've seen on Twitter already about the play selection to go Shireman in the post and that action off the baseline out of bounds. I thought that was great. You isolated the guy that has been the hottest for you. And it just didn't work out. He lost the ball, right? But I thought the play design was good, and it was a good thought. He's a bigger guy being guarded by a smaller defender. It is what it is.
Yeah, he lost the ball on that one, which is brutal. Colby Jones played good defense. I think he'd like for a little more movement around him, but if you get that ISO look, I mean, that's why you get Baylor Shireman. And that's also why Xavier's got Colby Jones here. I mean, those are two of the best on the wing in the Big East going at it. And I mean, Colby Jones got the best of it that time. There's no telling what's going to happen the next time. When they go to Omaha, that might be Shireman actually making the play.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's how razor thin these margins are right now. It's one or two shot difference with a lot of these teams at the top. All right. I believe that's going to do it for us on this episode. We should be back Sunday morning to do – it should be Tommy and I, and we'll see who else ends up coming on. Do a little preview of those Sunday afternoon games. You know, you got to make sure to get a healthy dose of your Big East basketball this weekend in between the NFL playoff games.
Don't watch the playoff games. Football's lame. We saw it with the Georgia TCU game. Football stinks. Watch basketball only.
Let me tell you, as a Michigan fan who had to watch the Wolverines throw two pick sixes against TCU, and then a Patriots fan who had to watch the Bills return two kicks for touchdowns in that game on Sunday. Yeah, that's a whole bunch of the insane plays deciding seasons right there. Chris is a Raiders fan. I'm a Pats fan, so we know all about the insane plays deciding games and also what it's like to not be in the playoffs this year. So
shoot. Yeah, no, great hoops this weekend. I'm glad they didn't dumb down the slate, because the NFL are still some fantastic hoops. So that's great.
Yeah, and it's gonna be a great weekend for like apps and just getting the queso out.
Getting the queso, or some
Mott sticks, buffalo chicken dip.
Ooh, yeah, God. Shout out to George, right?
Yeah.
Callback, yeah. Guys. We're doing callbacks to the last podcast. This is good.
Yeah. Make sure to get your grocery shopping in on Friday and get like 2 days worth of just table eats that you can have ready to go. Just hang out on your couch and prepare for it, because you're going to be on the couch all weekend.
You bet.
Yeah. All right. That's going to do it for us. We'll be back Sunday morning. Thanks for joining me, Chris. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Subscribe wherever you're listening to this, and we'll be talking to you shortly.